Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And good morning. Welcome to the Hoosier Report. Lee Kelly sending in for Matt Dennison this morning. Matt will be back with you on Monday here on the Hoosier Report. Glad you're with us and stick around. We've got a lot of things to talk about, a lot of things to cover today, such as the royal wedding. Who is walking what's-her-name down the aisle? Is it Laurel or Yanni? And has this country lost its ever-loving mind? That's not what we're talking about today, but that's what the rest of the country's talking about today, apparently. So glad you're with us. Let's take a look at what is going on today as we move forward with the Hoosier Report. Our guest lineup today brought to you by Honey Baked Ham. Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. If you mention that, you get $1 off your box lunch at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. That's in the Northgate Shopping Center, and that's located right off Grantline Road just before Mount Tabor. So, Honey Baked Ham. Our guest lineup today, Jared Morris of Assembly Call, will be joining us around 11:15 this morning. Kyle Nedenrip of the Indianapolis Star will be with us at 11:30. And in our final segment, we'll be talking with David Throckmorton, son of Ted Throckmorton, and all of you know Ted was on this station for years, a very civic-minded gentleman who lived in Jeffersonville and just a quality individual. And there is a golf tournament each year for Crusade for Children, something that was very near and dear to Ted's heart, and we'll be talking about that golf scramble. It comes up this weekend, and David Throckmorton will be with us in that final segment. As we move ahead, we'll talk a little bit about what's going on in sports. It is brought to you by Hoopster Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. Hoopsters is your hometown sports grill where hometown fans watch hometown teams play. Hoopsters was voted as best sports bar and best place to watch sports by the News and Tribune's Reader's Choice Awards. Hoopsters in Jeffersonville, where fun happens. So that'll be coming up. Let's find out what is going on. Let me find my notes here. Let's take a look. First of all, high school track going on last night. We had the girls on Tuesday. The boys last night competed. And in the Jeffersonville sectional, Jeff won their 45th sectional crown in track, a 157-113 win over Silver Creek last night. And in the Floyd Central sectional, I know there's two sectionals. They're a few miles apart. Why? I don't know. But last night at Floyd Central defeated New Albany, 187-138. Those were the top two teams, Corydon with 70, Providence with 66 in that sectional at Floyd Central. And as if having two sectionals isn't enough, the top three teams, I know the top three individuals qualify for regional, but they don't go to the same regional. One goes to Bloomington, one goes to Evansville, because it would just be too easy to send them to the same sectional. Let's take a look at tennis last night in the Jeff sectional, the final. Providence defeated Jeff 5-0. They will move on to the regional next week at Floyd Central. New Albany, head coach Bob Douche winning their sectional 5-0 over Christian Academy. They will move on. And Silver Creek, they played their semifinals yesterday. South Central defeated Borden. Silver Creek defeated Charlestown. They'll play for the championship tonight. Floyd Central, they will play their championship game today. Floyd Central, I am sure, in the championship, but I could not find the scores anywhere this morning. Made a couple of email requests, and nobody wanted to talk to me this morning, so I don't have that. But winners from those four sites will meet at Floyd Central next week in the regional. I believe that's Tuesday and Wednesday. And let's see here. Let me move along to my next page, and we'll find out what else is going on. And that's not it. Went the wrong way. Modern technology and I do not always get along. Let's take a look at the NBA. Boston up 2-0 over Cleveland. Game 3 in Cleveland will be tomorrow, May the 19th. That's scheduled for an 8:30 Eastern time start in that game tomorrow. As we said, Boston up 2-0, now moving over to Cleveland for Game 3. In the Western Conference Finals, Houston and Golden State tied at one game apiece, and they will move to Oakland for Game 3 on Sunday. That's an 8 o'clock Eastern time start. The game with Houston and Golden State going to be on TNT, ESPN covering the Cleveland-Boston games, just in case you were wondering. Going to check in a little bit on two of our local baseball stars that are playing in the minor leagues. First of all, New Albany and U of L star Josh Rogers went seven strong innings yesterday in a no-decision game for Scranton-Wilkes-Barre. The Yankees AAA farm team, Rogers left the game actually trailing 4-2. Railroaders came back with two in the eighth to tie it and won it in the bottom of the 11th. The start time for that game, incidentally, 10:35 a.m. Not sure why, but that's pretty early for baseball. Josh has an earned run average under 3 on the season at 2.98. And I love the names of these minor league teams. Yesterday's game was a classic. The Iron Pigs played the Rail Riders. Scranton Wilkes-Barre, by the way, is fourth in the International League North Division with a 19-19 record, but is only 1.5 games out of first place. Very close race in that division. Incidentally, Louisville and Indianapolis are in the International League as well. They are in the West Division. And the big lefty from New Albany will be in Louisville to play the bats in about 12 days, and so hoping he'll get a start on the mound while he's here playing Louisville. A lot of people planning on going over to watch those games. Let's check in, find out about Jeffersonville and U of L star Drew Ellis playing for Visalia of the California League. He has raised his batting average to 264. That's about 30 points higher than the last time we checked, so he's on a roll. He has 5 home runs and 26 RBIs on the season. He's tied for second in home runs and leading the team in RBIs. He's third on the team in hitting, and Visalia third in the Northern Division of the California League. They are 3 games over 500 in that division as well. So that gives you an idea of what is going on in sports a little bit. We'll find out more about what people know that I don't, and that probably is a great deal. So that is all coming up. Brought to you by Hoopsters. These headlines, Hoopsters, your hometown sports grill. And I hope you're able to make it over there this weekend. Good food, good times at Hoopsters. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back in just a few minutes with Jared Morris of Assembly Call, and we'll be getting the latest information. We'll be back on 1450 and 96.1 WXVW.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And And good morning once again. Lee Kelly sitting in for Matt Dennison on this Friday. Matt will be back in the chair on Monday. Hope Matt has a great weekend. Our guest, Jared Morris of Assembly Call. Good morning, sir.
Hey, how you doing, Lee?
So far, so good. Hope the rest of the day goes as well. I think I know the answer to this, but let me ask you, what is the topic that's been at the head of the list in the last few days that you've heard being discussed about Indiana athletics?
Well, unfortunately, it has been the story from the Washington Post about Romeo Langford's AAU team and Adidas sponsoring Romeo Langford's AAU team, which is all information that we already knew. And the insinuation, both in that article and then in some subsequent coverage, that there, you know, was something shady about it or that it was dirty. And to me, which, you know, seemed a little bit ridiculous, seemed a little bit even irresponsible at times with the way that it was reported. But hopefully that's a story that, you know, obviously you don't want anything else to come out that suggests any rules were broken, anything like that, because to this point, there's been no insinuation of that. But it's just kind of been one of those annoying stories that I think has gotten more coverage than it deserved. So hopefully we can put it all behind us here in pretty short order.
Yeah, even I knew about this, and I'm the last one to know anything. So I knew about this last summer because I was checking about teams and why the name and different things. And so it wasn't news to me. There were some things. I had no idea that that kind of money was involved promoting teams and so on. So yeah. Apparently this is not something that's brand new. He's the only one that ever did it. But this apparently is something that has been going on for a while and is big bucks.
Yeah, and look, that part of it is eye-opening because I didn't really know that either. And we kind of got an inkling of it, at least, you know, the general public, not people who know more of what goes on behind the scenes. But when the story came out about Marvin Bagley and his family and, you know, I guess his, you know, parents had gone from bankruptcy to living in a really nice house, and it was all because of this money that they'd been paid by the shoe companies for, you know, to sponsor the AAU team. And so this is, you know, this is a thing that happens. And Romeo is obviously an incredibly talented player, and any shoe company would want to establish a relationship with him because it's assumed that he will go on and have a lengthy, successful NBA career. And that's just the way that business is done, is that those relationships develop in high school. And for the elite of the elite, they can even, you know, get teams almost of their own sponsored like that. But I guess, you know, I look at that and I can see why people think of it as kind of shady or dirty, just because we've been primed to think that way because of how college basketball is covered. But really, to me, it kind of made me take a step back and think about the system as a whole. Because, you know, if Romeo Langford was just a really good salesman, you know, and Adidas was trying to court him to be a salesman and he wasn't a basketball player, no one would think twice about this. And in essence, that's what they're trying to do because they want him to sell shoes. He just does it by way of being a great basketball player. But, you know, because there's basketball involved and they're, you know, paying for an AAU team, but that AAU team also gives opportunities to a lot of kids who are going to be able to go across the country and be seen. So I guess I have a really hard time seeing why it's so dirty and shady for, you know, for the family to accept money from a shoe company to sponsor the AAU team. And I really have a hard time, you know, seeing why people would kind of turn a side eye at IU when, you know, no rules have been broken. There's, you know, this is just what goes on. And there's, you know, I mean, Indiana was just one of a few Adidas schools that Romeo was looking at. So I don't know, the furor over it, I just haven't quite understood. And it's kind of made me reevaluate a little bit, you know, what I think about some of these things and what we call dirty and what we call shady. And is it really, or is it just the context that surrounds college basketball, odd as it is, that kind of primes us to think that?
You know, one of the things that, in addition to being able to watch most of Romeo's games the last 4 years that I have dearly loved, it's opened my eyes to any number of things that I didn't really understand. And I pick up a great deal from Matt Dennison and the people that he interviews because I listen to the show, I set in periodically, and it's been an education in itself of things I just flat didn't know. I live in a little cocoon in New Albany, Indiana, apparently. And once things get outside of that, I have no idea they're out there. But last summer, when Romeo was playing in a tournament, I can't even tell you which one, but I went online to see if I could find out how he did, and there was like minute-by-minute coverage of every game in this tournament, box scores, and all of this information. It was so eye-opening, just that little piece of it, that I thought, there's more money involved in this than I really realized, because this is not something you just put a couple of people on a laptop and say, take care of this.
Yeah, I mean, that's the reality, and I guess, you know, that has changed the context a little bit, is that there is so much more money in it now. And again, I guess, you know, I don't have a big problem with someone like Romeo, you know, Romeo's family, you know, accepting what is being offered to them. And so I don't understand the aspersions that have been cast, or where it's kind of made it out to seem like they're doing something wrong. I just think that is more an indictment of the context and kind of the overall system. And for some reason, we keep applying kind of the labels of bad to the wrong people when we talk about this.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are looking for something, some type of chink in the armor, something, because he can't possibly be as good as forecast, as told in all of these stories. So I think people are looking for something. I don't think they're going to find it personally. I'll be surprised if anything comes out ever about this young man. He's a very special young man. I'm glad I lived long enough to see him come through and be able to watch him. So that part's good. What else is going on with IU at the moment as we head into really a dead period in the summer? I'm sure the players are working out. I'm sure the recruits are going to be arriving on campus in the near future. So all of that's happening. But what other scuttlebutt is out there, Jared?
Well, it's a good question. You know, this is one of the slower times. I think the big decision that everybody is awaiting is Juwan Morgan. What will he do? The NBA Combine is going on right now, and he did not get invited to the Combine. So he's done some workouts for a few teams. From what I've heard, you know, he's exploring the potential of an overseas option. He will have to make a final decision by May 30th. And so when he makes that decision, then we will know what the full roster will be next year. And, you know, either it'll be a really young team, you know, counting on Romeo's scoring and looking to replace the leadership and overall production of Juwan Morgan, which still, you know, will be a fun team to watch and to look forward to. Or you're talking about a team that adds Romeo Langford to, you know, one of the favorites for Big Ten Player of the Year in Juwan Morgan based on what he did last year. And now you go into the season with a 1-2 punch, you know, that you would pretty much put up against most in the country, which is obviously a great foundation on which Archie can build his second team at Indiana. So that's the big kind of outstanding issue is, you know, what will happen there for Juwan Morgan. I think once we know that for sure, you know, we can start projecting forward for next season with a little bit more clarity, especially then when you find out what other Big Ten guys do, you know, like Carson Edwards from Purdue. Got a late invite to the Combine. Does that change his calculus on whether he comes back or not? So that's the next step, is find out who's staying, find out who's going, and then you can really start projecting forward for what Indiana will look like and kind of how the conference shakes out, or will shake out for next year.
Yeah, and again, living in a cocoon, for a long time I didn't realize the kind of money that players could make playing overseas, as they say. I didn't realize the dollar amounts. And when you look at Juwan Morgan, had a fantastic year. His name was mentioned a great many times on ESPN, your shows, other websites. So his level is very high right now, and I could see why the young man might think, you know, if you put the pros and cons, I come back next year, I get hurt, or I don't play as well, or I don't get as many headlines as I did this year, maybe my stock would drop and I would have even less of a negotiating chance overseas or with the NBA or the G League or whatever it might be. So I understand that a little bit, but as an IU fan, I certainly hope he comes back, because I like watching him play, and I'd love to watch him and Romeo team up next year.
Oh, man. I mean, they would be so fun to watch play together, because it really feels like their game would click, and it really feels like the presence of Romeo would take a lot of pressure off of Juwan and open things up for him, and vice versa, because we know how effective Juwan can be down low, and that would certainly help take some pressure off of Romeo out on the wing. You know, and it's going to be interesting to see what Juwan does, because you just articulated a lot of the reasons why, even if he's not going to be drafted by an NBA team, which appears likely that he won't, why going to Europe might be a good option, you know, and getting that started a year early. And in some ways, you know, his game, his current game anyway, you know, if he can expand his shooting range and become a more consistent three-point shooter and, you know, even improve as a ball handler, you know, I think he's got some NBA potential, but based on how he played last year, and it was much more post-oriented and kind of using his quickness and guile around the post, that's the kind of stuff that's not going to work very well in the NBA, but I think could work, you know, more overseas. Now, you know, the downside to playing over there is you've got a lot of guys who have horror stories of, you know, not getting paid and, you know, and things going wrong. So you definitely want to make sure that you get with a legitimate league and a legitimate team, because it's not quite, in some of those leagues and some of those places, it's not quite as buttoned up as, you know, what we're used to with the NBA. So he's got a lot to weigh. I think it's fantastic for him that he's put himself in a position where this is a legitimate decision for him, because either way, I think it's a great decision. He either goes, begins his professional career doing what he loves and making money, or he comes back to a team that has the roster to compete for a Big Ten championship and to, you know, get back to the NCAA tournament and maybe even make a run.
Yeah, and I was looking this morning on, I can't even tell you the website it was on this morning. By the way, we're talking with Jared Morris of Assembly Call here this morning on the Hoosier Report. I was looking at all of the different transfers that were all listed together, and I think this particular article was talking about who the winners and losers as far as the colleges and who they were able to get. But it seems to me that there are just a whole lot more people moving around, whether they be graduates or whether they be just players leaving one school to go to another. Is it just me, or is there a lot more movement, or at least a lot of movement among players on the college D1 level?
No, there's definitely a lot of movement. I think the advent of the graduate transfer added another, you know, vehicle for people to be able to move. And because you can move and not sit out a year, that becomes very attractive for guys who, you know, may have played a few years in one, you know, at one school, and maybe there was a coaching change, or maybe it's just not the right fit, or they haven't gotten the opportunity and they find a better fit, you know, like what Max Bielfeldt did at IU. And so you're seeing a lot of guys take that route, but it also seems like a lot more guys are just transferring, you know, even if they have to sit out a year. And, you know, I'm sure there are many, many, many factors that go into that, but it is causing quite a bit of turnover. And it's, you know, it used to just, you know, when you thought about recruiting, you just kind of thought about, okay, what are the incoming freshmen that we're going to be able to get? But for the last few years, you know, a big part of that is, okay, who's going to be on the grad transfer market? What are the transfers, you know, are going to be available? Who do we have to worry about leaving? Who could, you know, who's potentially a former highly recruited guy that is dissatisfied to potentially target? So it is, I think, a more complicated and busier world for coaches to navigate. And, you know, you just hope that when guys transfer, and I'm not one who necessarily thinks it's a, like, I don't think every player should just fight through it. There's no guarantee that it will get better on the other end of it. I mean, making a college decision is difficult, and if you go to a place and you find out that it's not the right fit with the coach or with your teammates or with the system or just, you know, the university, I think you should have the ability to move and change and go try to find a better place. Now, there needs to be balance there. You don't want to do it just at the first sign of trouble. So you just hope when you see all of this movement that guys are doing it for the right reasons. And really taking the time, investing the time to make a good choice for where they're going to go, because what you really wouldn't want to have happen is, you know, you make a capricious decision to transfer and you end up, you know, in the same or an even worse spot than if you had just stayed where you are. So, but it's definitely a different landscape, and it, you know, it creates a little bit more intrigue for the offseason, I think, for fans, but probably a lot more headaches and less sleep for coaches.
I think part of it, before social media, there wasn't avenues to tell all of us about what's going on out there. So we relied on strictly newspaper reports coming out, some radio shows that had some inside information. But with social media every time a player sneezes somewhere, it's written on Twitter or Facebook, I think.
Yeah, oh, no, there's no question. I mean, that has changed so much about how sports are covered and how fans interact, you know, with sports and with athletes. So it is an entirely different world, and it does kind of make you, you know, sit back and wonder how things, you know, how would certain eras have been different, or how would teams have been different? You know, the 76 Hoosiers, you know, if they had, you know, if there had been social media and all the attention now that would be, you know, placed on a team that was going undefeated and trying to do what they were able to do, you know, would they be able to stand up to that? You know, what would Bob Knight have done to try and cordon them off from having to deal with that? You know, those kind of hypotheticals are fun to ponder sometimes.
I try to picture Bobby Knight posting on Facebook and Twitter, and it gives me a headache every time I think about it. So I don't know what that would have been like. It would have been interesting, to say the least.
Jared, yes, it would have been.
Jared Morris has been our guest of Assembly Call. Jared, thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Lee.
Jared Morris of Assembly Call joining us here in our first segment, or actually second segment this morning. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with Kyle Neddenrip of the Indianapolis Star coming up next here on the Hoosier Report on WXVW, 1450 AM, 96.1 FM.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt Daly at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And welcome back to the Hoosier Report. Lee Kelly setting in for Matt Dennison today on this Friday, May the 18th. Matt will be back with you on Monday. Our next guest, Kyle Neddenrip of the Indianapolis Star. Good morning, Kyle.
Hey, good morning, Lee. How you doing?
I'm almost awake, and things are going well so far, as far as I know. How's everything
good
in India this morning?
Good. A couple of basketball coaching hires made, so we're getting a couple of those done, and hopefully a couple more here shortly, and teams will be set for June.
Share with us on the couple that were filled up that way.
Yeah, Southport hired Eric Brand, who was the South Bend Riley coach last year. Tim Adams was hired at Park Tudor. Tim was a coach at Cathedral as an assistant for several years under Andy Fagan, and had been at Marion University most recently for a couple of years. So he'd been looking to get a head coaching job for a few years now, I think Park Tudor will be a good – I think that was a good hire for them, and I think he'll do well there. And he's looking to build something for a long time, and I think that'll be a good spot for him.
Yeah, two good jobs, too. I mean, that's two quality jobs, Southport especially, beautiful facility, and a rich tradition in basketball history. So Park Tudor, rich history as well. But two good jobs. That's good when you get good people and good jobs.
Yeah, those both are good, high quality. Of course, Ben Davis had been open. Don Carlisle, who was the Arlington assistant or Arlington coach, he had been a Ben Davis player under Steve Whitty back in the '90s, and so I think that was another good fit, good hire after Mark James left for Perry Meridian. So that one filled, and then North Central is still open. I know they're targeting probably early June to have something in place there. Cecina is open as well, and Mount Vernon, I expect their coaching hire to probably be completed here pretty quickly. But quite a few. Seems like a little bit more than usual, especially some of the more high profile like Ben Davis, Southport, you know, Park Tudor, North Central. Those are all four big jobs, and Cecina is another good one, and Mount Vernon's been a good program. So, you know, a lot of good openings this year. It seems like more than we've had here in at least the last 3 or 4 years, for sure.
Sometimes you just get caught off guard. Doug Mitchell, I just lose track of how long he has been there, but it just seems normal that Doug Mitchell will be the coach at North Central in basketball year after year. And when I read his announcement, it just kind of threw me for a loop. He had done an outstanding job, and he's such a nice man to talk to that hate to see him leave, to say the least.
Yeah, Yeah, I told him that. We'd talked a few weeks before he officially announced, and, you know, every year it seems like we'd talk and he'd say, oh, this might be it for me, and I kind of would brush it off and and know that he would be ready to go by the, you know, he just needed some time to be, you know, away from it after the season. And but this year definitely seemed different. You know, he was in a position where he could retire as a teacher as well. And he just felt like, you know, they had a rough year win-loss-wise, but he said it was one of his most enjoyable seasons, really. You know, but, you know, he just felt like it was time to, he didn't want to get to a point where, you know, it didn't feel like he should be in that position anymore. And I don't think he ever, definitely didn't lose the passion for it. He's one of the more passionate coaches I've ever covered. So, you know, but I was disappointed just because I always enjoyed, you know, probably more than anybody, just sitting down to talk to him about, you know, stuff, not even stuff for stories, but just sitting down and talk with him just as a person. So, you know, I was, you know, it's when you lose people like that, it's always a little bit disappointing that you know pretty well. I'm sure he's going to, you know, go on and do other things and get to enjoy his grandkids. And I think he still plans to, you know, come around and, you know, be part of the North Central family still. And, but yeah, you're right. It seems odd, you know, that you go to North Central and he won't be there as a coach. And it's kind of like when Jack Kiefer, when he ever leaves Lawrence North, because they've never had another coach at Lawrence North. So that'll feel different too. But I think it feels the same way for Mitchell at North Central.
Yeah. Doug Mitchell is always one of the guys that I felt like had it all in the proper perspective. He knew basketball was important, but he knew there were other things that were more important, and he could talk about anything almost in a conversation. So I'll miss that part of him being more than just a basketball coach and more than being able to talk about basketball.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to be around him when he'd talked to his team, and you know, you're right. I mean, he talked a lot of more than if you ask the kids on the team, I think, who played for him or men now, but, you know, they'll say that he's not an easy coach to play for. I mean, he's not easy on you, which I think is maybe more rare to find these days because of just the way the coaching world works anymore. But, you know, if you made it through with him, you know, the kids who played for him were really loyal to him and I think learned a lot about life. And he has an interesting background. He's from Hamilton County back when Hamilton County was a very rural area and one of the few African-American families there at that time. So, you know, we've talked a lot about stuff like that, which I think just makes Doug unique. He has a unique perspective on things. Of course, he lost his son in a car accident several years ago and has, you know, has spoken to groups about that. And so I think he's got a lot to offer more than, you know, I'm a very successful basketball coach, but has a lot more to offer just than X's and O's of basketball, no doubt.
Kyle Nittenrip, our guest here on the Hoosier Report from the Indianapolis Star. Well, Kyle, it's the time in the show when I need to ask you, were you shocked when the story came out in the Washington Post about Romeo Langford, his father having an AAU team and money exchanged and so on?
No, you know, it's kind of the way, you know, I'm sure any top 20 recruit in the last, you know, several years, it has a similar type story. Not all of them, you know, are, you know, get their own AAU teams like Tim Langford did. But you know, it's not, you know, we all kind of knew this had happened, and not the details of it. I thought the story, you know, first off, I thought the story was very well reported. I mean, I thought it was interesting. A lot of details that were just interesting, how it all works, how the sausage is made type of story. I think on the surface of it, though, it almost implicates Romeo as doing something wrong, you know, and just by the nature of the story. I'm not saying the writer from the Post was, you know, did that exactly, or it was, like I said, very well reported story. But, you know, I on the surface of it, I don't think there is anything that they did that was anything illegal or anything, you know, to worry about from that aspect, unless there's more to come. You know, it's just kind of, it's a free enterprise system, and, you know, they were able to, Adidas was able to keep him under their control, you know, keep them with Adidas by, you know, offering Tim a team to have on the circuit. And, You know, that's kind of the nature of it. You know, Marvin Bagley has a very similar, almost identical type story. So, and he was fine to play at Duke. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's just it was interesting story. I thought it was, like I said, well reported. It was it kind of connects the dots for people who aren't in that AAU world. You kind of see how it all fits together and how the system works. And you know, it's not a perfect system by any means, but you know, I think back to how much money, you know, Romeo probably made for New Albany High School, you know, how much money they brought in, and you know, it's almost like, you know, what, you know, where's their piece of it, you know? So I understand. I mean, it's you know, if you've got a situation where you've got a kid who people want, you know, Adidas and Nike and Under Armour, of course they all want him to play on their circuit. So again, I don't sense that there's anything illegal or you know, going on here that IU or anybody's got to worry about. But the nature of it makes it look like there's something sneaky or shady or you know, something out of control. But I really don't sense that, and haven't sensed that in the past few days.
Kyle Nedendrup of the Indianapolis Star, our guest this morning. You had an article, I don't know if it was yesterday or today. I read it today. It was about Kokomo High School baseball and three D1 pitchers on that same team. And while the fact they play for Kokomo didn't mean much to me, what it kind of brought out for me that the nature of high school sports, and one of the reasons I love high school sports, is they've got three D1 pitchers, and if you just write it down on paper, you'd go, yeah, they're going to win the state championship because they got three guys that really apparently throw the ball well, so obviously they've got a leg up, and yet they're seniors, and they've never won a state championship, and may not this year. It's just one of the things I think that makes high school sports so special, because you cannot just look at it on paper and say, yep, that's how it's going to happen today.
Yeah, this is a really interesting story. I went out and watched them play about a month ago, probably 5 weeks ago, and they were playing in a showcase deal at Grand Park in Westfield, and they were playing Cincinnati Moeller, and Cincinnati Moeller is like a machine. I didn't realize how, you know, I knew that they're a good football program, but man, they were a machine hitting the ball, and they beat Kokomo really, really badly. I think it was like 21-8 or something like that was the final score. And so I kind of shelved the story for a while. I was like, man, I will maybe revisit this once they start playing better. And they have played a lot better. Last night they beat the number one team in the state, Huntington North. And I think that's, you know, 10 out of their last 12. They won the North Central Conference tournament. So they're starting to get it going here. But, I, you know, it's a really interesting story because these three guys are, you know, came in as freshmen. Everybody thought, you know, around Kokomo, which is a, you know, a good baseball community, the expectations were just through the roof with these guys. And they knew they'd won a lot growing up, you know, playing in the Kokomo system. You know, so they were already well known around there before they even played a game. And, you know, they've never won a sectional. And then until this year, hadn't won a conference tournament either. So, you know, it's not that they haven't played well, because they have, and they're all three of them are signed Division I, and they're all really good pitchers, and they're also good hitters too. Jack Perkins is just about, probably he might be the most well-rounded athlete, or one of them, you know, in the state. He's just exceptional at anything he does. And Kyle Wade's a quarterback, and Baden Root's a really good pitcher whose dad played in the minor leagues. So it's just an interesting story of expectations that were probably too high, you know, a group that, you know, probably, you know, has felt like they've underachieved to a certain extent. But, you know, you also figure in there in the same sectional with McCutchen and Zionsville, who are both really good teams year in and year out. It's probably the toughest 4A sectional in the state. So that's part of it too. And winning it this year won't be easy. I mean, there's no guarantees, you know, that they'll have to get through McCutchen that first game and then probably play Zionsville in the championship game. So, you know, it's an interest. It's kind of a Friday Night Lights. Even the coach said that, you know, there's a lot of moving pieces behind the scenes and, you know, pitch counts that have to stay at a certain level and, you know, dealing with a lot of different things. And, you know, so I'm kind of curious to see what happens with this team. I think it'd be a great story if they went on and, you know, won state, you know, for them anyway, it would be a great story. But, you know, there's no baseball, such a fickle sport that way. Sometimes it just takes one bad day or one, you know, one bad break and you're out. So, But really fun group to talk to, and it was neat to get up there and meet those guys and watch them play a couple times.
Outstanding story. Enjoyed reading it. Kyle, thank you very much for joining us on this Friday, and we'll talk to you later.
Okay, sounds good, Lee. Thanks a lot.
All right. Kyle Nedenrip of the Indianapolis Star joining us this morning, and if you get the opportunity, Kyle's columns are always interesting to read. It's not always about this area.
Yeah, but
one thing about those three pitchers, one of those three coming to the University of Louisville has a scholarship waiting for him there. So a little bit of local interest there in that Kokomo story about
baseball.
So we thank you for joining us. And by the way, we'll be back in just a moment to talk with David Throckmorton, talking about the Crusade for Children Golf Scramble. That'll be coming up next here on the Hoosier Report on 1450 and 96.1 WXVW.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
You know, a basketball hero around here is treated like a god.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
You know, most people would kill to be treated like a god just for a few moments.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And welcome back to the final segment of Hoosier Report for this Friday, May the 18th. Lee Kelly sitting in for Matt Dennison, and glad you're with us this morning. The final guest in our final segment, David Throckmorton, son of Ted Throckmorton, a name that I'm sure all of you recognize from his days here at WXVW as the voice of the Red Devils, but so much more than that. One of the nicest people I ever had the opportunity to meet, and whenever we ran into each other at a basketball game, it was always great to kind of bring each other up on what had been going on. David, good morning and welcome to the show.
Well, good morning, Lee, and thank you very much for those kind words. My father absolutely loved that radio station and loved being on the broadcast for both the football and basketball teams there at Jeff and various schools there in Southern Indiana. And this is a very special event that we have every year to try to honor not only my father as a man, but certainly as for his volunteer work with the Crusade for Children.
The Crusade for Children had a very special place in his heart, and he donated not only a lot of time, but a lot of money as well. Is that correct?
Well, yes, sir, he did. He started with WHAS back in the early 1950s when he got home from the Korean War. And Milton Metz and a gentleman named Bob Pilkington, I guess the three of them were the Iron Horsemen that started with the initial crusade and stayed with it until all three gentlemen have passed. And Milton Metz passed, I believe, last year or the year before, and they honored him with a tremendous donation. And you know, this is something small that we do that, it's something that we can give back to the community and honor, again, my dad's love for the Crusade and the people associated with it.
Now, the Crusade for Children Golf Scramble, it's this weekend. Is that right, David?
That's correct. It's this Sunday at 1 o'clock at the Elk Run Golf Course there, formerly Jeffersonville Elks, which my father was a charter member of that. Wonderful organization, and it's a four-man scramble. We do have room for some teams. We also have various levels of sponsorship if people can't play but they still want to become a part of this. Again, this is our fifth annual. We've raised almost $75,000 in the first five, and we're expecting to top 90,000 and maybe even 100,000 this year with a good turnout. So the course is in wonderful shape. It's a beautiful golf course, and we have a wonderful fried chicken dinner afterwards. 100% of the entry fees for the players goes directly to the Crusade. We've got some wonderful sponsors that we underwrite all of our expenses with: Monarch Beverage, Republic Bank, Fowl Oil Company, Jeff KFC, just to name a few. This is a direct donation of the Crusade and 100% tax deductible. So we think we've got a really good setup. But we do have room, and people can call the golf course, 812-283-9022, for additional information.
All right. Sounds good. David Throckmorton talking about the Crusade for Children Golf Scramble. David, give us that phone number one more time, because if people are like me, they didn't have a pen ready.
All right. Well, it's 812-283-9022. Again, that's the Elk Run Golf Course in Jeffersonville, Indiana.
Well, thank you very much for coming on and joining us this morning. We have enjoyed it, and best of luck in the golf tournament. I hope everybody shows up. I hope Mother Nature is kind to you this weekend, and best of luck, and thank you so much for you guys, all you do in helping Crusade for Children, a great cause here in our area.
Well, thank you very much, Lee, and again, thank you for the kind words about my father. We'll present our check at 8 a.m. on the Sunday, June the 3rd at the Crusade. So I hope everybody tunes in and can see how much we've raised.
You know, one of my favorite stories about your father, and I've got just enough time to tell it. I had a few friends that worked at Jeff, but they were always talking about your father showing up at school to do different things and help out when needed. And they were telling me one day they looked out front, and he was out in front of school with a weed eater because he thought the weeds were a little too tall. He didn't want to call and complain, but he just went home, got his weed eater, came back, and took care of himself, and that was it. And they still tell that story till today, and that was the kind of person that he was. I mean, he wasn't going to raise any ruckus. He was just going to take care of the problem.
Well, I appreciate that story, and there's several of those stories at the Oaks Club there, the golf course as well. So he was, he was quite the green thumb, had quite the green thumb.
Good enough. David, thank you very much. Good luck with the tournament.
Thank you, sir. Have a great day.
All right. David Throckmorton, son of Ted Throckmorton. And that's going to wrap it up for us here on the Hoosier Report on 1450 and 96.1 WXVW. Matt Dennison going to be back with you on Monday here at the Hoosier Report at 11 a.m. live and 3 p.m. for the replay. Thank you.